Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 13 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Well, I'm sitting here so excited to be talking about, body image among women, a hot topic. Yeah, you heard me right, and to help us understand all about body image is our guest, Adrienne Ressler. But before we get in there, I just want to let you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They are delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't want to forget them because they taste so great. So you'll be popping your vitamins every single day. To learn more, please go to smartypantsvitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode. Rate this podcast and review us. We really welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
On this episode, we're excited to have Adrienne Ressler help us navigate the wild and crazy topic of women and body image. Adrienne Ressler is Vice President of Professional Development for the Renfrew Center Foundation. Renfrew, as many of us know, is one of the leading national centers that helps women with body image issues, as well as eating disorders in general. They have outpatient and inpatient residential treatment centers throughout the United States. She is a body image specialist and a member of the Academy of Eating Disorders and a fellow and past president of the Board of Directors of the International Association of Eating Disorder Professionals. You know, I've known Adrienne for more years than I can count, Adrienne, and I can tell you right now, we're going to be talking to one of the nation's experts on all things women and body image. Hey, Adrienne, welcome back to Her.
Oh, thank you so much, Pam. I'm so glad to be talking to you and to your guests, listeners.
All right. So there was an amazing experiment that was done. Let's start off with that. And that experiment is, well, it answers the question, how do you get a young, bright woman to bomb a math test? Answer, have her take it while wearing a bathing suit. All right, Adrienne, take it from here. What the heck is that about?
Well, it's kind of funny. I was thinking when you were talking earlier that these women could have been wearing smarty pants, too, that your advertiser has, because anything like that appears to be very, very distracting to women. In this study, which was actually done in 1998, and today I can only imagine how it would have increased in the way that the results came out. But they had women and men took part in this study, and they divided them up into dressing rooms. And one group of the women and one group of the men, they were separated, were wearing bathing suits. And the other groups were not wearing bathing suits. They were wearing sweaters. And all of them were asked to take a math test just to pass the time, because they were doing another experimental study, an educational study. And what do you think happened, Pam?
Well, okay. As all of us women know, basically anyone who owns a set of ovaries at any one point in your life knows, all you have to do is like step on the scale or, you know, put on a piece of clothing that's too tight, or God forbid, see yourself, you know, in your undies or a bikini or something. And it just, you know, if it didn't go well, then I can absolutely guarantee you that no matter how smart you are, how adept you are, how confident you are, it all went to trash, because suddenly it just all inverts, because your conception of who you are just went to help, basically. All right, Adrian, take it from here.
Absolutely right. It was no surprise, but the women in the bathing suits had much more of a problem with staying focused. If you think about it, the focus on the math test, and they were the lowest scorers of the women in sweaters, the men in bathing suits, and the men in sweaters. So the researchers decided to run the test again, and the women who were in the bathing suits, giving them sweaters and slacks to put on and giving them an equally difficult math test. And in the sweaters and the slacks, they scored much higher. So I think there's some very interesting dynamics that this study brings about, which was what was going on behind the scenes. In terms of why were they so distracted, there weren't other people around, you know, watching them or making comments on their body, but it was their own perception of their bodies and how they looked. They were watching themselves in the mirror. They were, you know, pulling their bathing suit down. They were distracted tremendously. And I think we see that. We can multiply the intensity of that study to the culture and what women are facing today in terms of body image issues, of being influenced by the media, by people being terrified of being overweight and bullying people who may be a little above the weight they should be. There's a tremendous, as you know, Pam, tremendous dynamics focused on women that make us feel ashamed, practically, of having a female body, as if we've committed some kind of a crime.
Now, I think, you know, let's also take that even further, because one of the things you've done so beautifully with your work with Renfrew and as a nationally recognized body image specialist is you've looked at age, you know, differences. So if you look at young women right now, especially with social media images, which are, you know, which basically emerge every single second of the day, looking at each other's friends, other people on social media, people Instagramming what they look like, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, let's look at differences in generations. So if you look, let's start with the young people. When I say young, I mean all the way through their 20s.
Okay. Well, for one thing, we see a lot of advertising directed just at young girls, and young girls are subjected to social media very, very early. I'm sure a lot of you have seen the beauty contests for little girls, where they looking like little adults and very sexualized adults. And right. The moms and the I won't blame moms. I'm a mom. But the people in the audience are applauding and laughing, and they're doing, you know, like sexually themed dances, and it's kind of crazy. And, it starts out, you think it's funny, but it's not funny, because their images of what it's like to be female start very early. And it starts very early for all of us. You know, what does it mean to be female? And for a lot of girls, as they come through puberty, think that they have to be perfect, they have to be slim. Every little girl wants to be like the little girl a couple years older than she is, until you get to be, that little girl gets to be about 25. Then you want to start being looking younger than she is. Nobody's ever satisfied. I think that's something in our culture that we see. But you're right, Pam, the susceptibility to the combination, I'll say it's a combination, of social media and exposure to advertising is really a double whammy. Because, what seems to be involved in advertising is to make us feel insecure. If a woman is very, very secure, she's not going to buy a lot of products that you're hawking. The weight loss industry has an amazing record of only growing bigger and more popular every year. And they advertise a product that has a 98% failure rate. You know, if you bought a box of waffles and they were, you know, they didn't work, or you bought a hammer and it didn't work, that company would go out of business pretty soon.
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, when you look at these young women, let's just say they're coursing from childhood into adolescence and then early adulthood, you know, as you know, and I know, and now soon everybody will know,
right,
the last part of the brain to develop is the frontal cortex. And that is the part of the brain right behind your forehead. Just tap your forehead, it's right behind there. that gives you your executive function, that helps you organize, plan, and really strategize your life.
Right, make decisions, right.
Exactly. And can you make the right decision, the wrong decision? It's that type of executive function. That's why many people call it the CEO of the brain. Well, you know, when are young women getting hammered? They're getting hammered during two very vulnerable times. One is when the frontal lobe is still developing, and it doesn't quit developing until the age of 25.
Right.
Right. The second thing that happens is a woman's body changes. And what you see, breasts and hips and thighs and a behind, and all of a sudden, you know, the female body is getting ready for procreation. And as a young woman goes through her pubescence, during this time, she's got all kinds of wild and crazy, you know, mental tsunamis going on in her mind about what her body is supposed to look like, how she fits in with other peers, and how this works with guys too, or, you know, whomever. And so you've got this crazy whirlwind of hormones and mood and changes and environment. At the same time, the brain is getting hammered with all of this input, not just from social media, but from peers and from, you know, bullying and everything else. And even from parents and people who may have good intentions, but maybe things didn't go so well in that communication. So it's a wonder that any of these kids come out of this alive.
No, you're absolutely right, because it's almost as if your brain and your body are at war. They're getting different messages. And I think the other thing that is so important in getting a young girl ready for menstruation, the body begins to put on fat. And we know that that is a word that should be a four-letter word in our culture, because everyone is terrified of fat. So I think the young girls are dealing with that also, because they do, you know, they gain fat during that time.
So, yeah, and fat is you know, the demon. It's the worst thing that could possibly happen to you, and it's so crazy, this messaging. But then, you know, I mean, I'm just putting it on everyone, not just moms and dads, everyone in that girl's environment. What messages is she hearing? When a mother walks by and says, "Oh my God, I'm feeling so fat today," you know, or a dad says, you know, and this is actually the God's honest truth. A mother and a father once told one of my patients when she was very young that all girls must be thin and beautiful. And that became the credo right there, thin and beautiful, and which led to each sister. There were two sisters, you know, walking right into the wonderful world of eating disorders.
You know, I think you're raising a really important point about messages. And sometimes we don't realize that what we say to one another has a very important meaning. If someone has lost weight, people begin to talk, you know, "Oh, you look so beautiful," and "Oh, you look marvelous," and "What size do you wear?" So that the person begins to think, you know, "What was wrong with me before, and now how do I stay thin so I get this much attention, and I better not gain any weight back. You know, so yeah, everyone is so focused on weight to give praise to somebody. It's much nicer, really, if I can offer a suggestion, if you see somebody has lost weight, to say, you know, you look really happy with yourself, or you look like you have so much more energy, or something that doesn't focus on weight, because you may not know that you are speaking to someone who has the potential to develop anorexia. And the only way she feels she can get attention is to keep that weight loss going, because once it gets going, there's almost no stopping it. It's very frightening.
There's no question about that. You know, one of the things, I think I told you this once, Adrian, that I've had a number of you know, people, both patients and just, you know, acquaintances, colleagues, I mean, whomever, who sometimes just quickly and casually say, you know, God, I wish I had anorexia. Oh, I wish I had that problem, instead of my binging and whatever. There is this stereotype that this is actually a good thing, that,
well,
you know, what's so wrong
with,
you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they don't understand what it truly is. It's a nightmare. And anorexia nervosa, untreated, carries a 100% mortality. And that's something people don't realize. They just say, well, she got a little thin. No, not really. And then there's all that gray zone in there, that, you know, chronic restrictive eating that a lot of women run to. It's not the perfect definition of anorexia, but it's ridiculously restrictive. And most of these women are well underweight, but not at that red zone of anorexia. But the grand majority of women out there are binging. Okay, that's,
yes,
really,
that's correct.
You know,
that's correct.
Yeah, the mass majority are binging. And when I say binging, I don't mean you're sitting in the corner and necessarily doing the Jabba the Hutt thing. I'm just simply saying that, you know, you're packing in an extra 500 to 1,000 calories a day and consistently gaining weight, feeling bad about it. Maybe you've also, you know, kind of sidebarred yourself into some bulimia as well. And there's lots of ways to do that, with over-exercising or just, you know, doing the classic vomiting, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's just this wild spectrum that oftentimes is initiated, don't you think, by a rotten sense of body image?
Absolutely, because what I was going to say is, among all the diagnostic categories that have to do with eating and eating disorders and addiction, what is underlying, you know, what's behind the scenes is always a poor body image, poor self-esteem. And what we're seeing is, even if individuals do not have a full-blown diagnosable eating disorder, the despair and the concern about one's body is paramount throughout the culture. And I know a lot of people really think it's in the United States. And I want to help your listeners understand, Pam, this is global. It is absolutely global. And I wanted to say a comment from earlier that a lot of people also think that it's just young people who have body image problems, or they are the most vulnerable. But we see so many women at midlife who have not only body image problems but severe eating disorders also, that may start at midlife or just went untreated until, you know, they just couldn't contain holding back the shame anymore, and at midlife. But we are seeing the despair of women trying to mold and shape and buff and do all kinds of crazy things to their body and their skin all over the world. And it's not just in the United States. What is interesting is that the United States is the model of how women around the world want to look. You know, we put out the most advertising, we put out the most magazines, we create the most illnesses through our media. Actually, the whole idea of cellulite came to come out in Vogue magazine about 20 years ago, where nobody ever talked about cellulite before that. And there was a 3-page article on cellulite and how disgusting it was. And the entire magazine was filled with advertising, you know, products for cellulite. That was more than 20 years ago. That was in 1968, and it was called A Created Disease by people who, you know, saw what was going on. And that's what we're seeing now all over the world. You might be surprised to know what country leads the way in plastic surgery. Any thoughts, Pam?
Oh.
Do you know?
Okay, let me think now. Okay, so I know that South America, there are a number of hot spots down there in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
Where they're really doing it big time. I know that in Asia, especially facial plastic surgery, but I think the South Americans were the ones who, you know, really led the way in just basically nipping and tucking everything that came within 20 feet of you. So what's the answer?
Yeah. Lebanon.
What?
Yep.
Lebanon?
Yep.
You can't even fly in there without being shot out of the sky. I mean, come on, give me a break.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my, Lebanon?
Yeah.
Why? Why? What's up with that?
They all want to look like American women. All means people who have the money to do this.
Yeah,
and because of that, one of the biggest businesses in Lebanon is the banking system, because they get, I just saw this statistic, over 300 calls a day for loans for plastic surgery in Lebanon. It's an industry.
God.
It's become a banking industry.
God. And one of the reasons... You know what the joke is? I think the Lebanese women are gorgeous. What are they doing?
Thing. Well, that's the thing, because it used to be that it was, let's say, people who weren't that attractive or were large and they didn't want to be that large, so they got liposuction. And all the advertising was directed to people who weren't satisfied with their bodies or their skin color. That's the other thing, is skin lightening. And now, and over the last 15, 20 years, advertising has also directed itself to those of us who feel okay about their bodies, but the advertising is so persistent and so in-depth and so clever that people who have felt good about their bodies wind up feeling ashamed of their bodies because of advertising. People, women who have perfectly beautiful bodies or beautiful faces, just like you're saying, Pam. I worked with a woman years ago who did have bulimia, and she really believed that if she wanted to have her lips, puffed up, whatever you call it. And she felt if her lip line was better, she would feel so much better about herself. So she did the surgery, and she did feel better about herself for about 2 months. And then, of course, her depression and her anxiety came back, because it had nothing to do with her lips or her face. But she was determined. She wound up having her nose done, her cheekbones raised, a cleft put in her chin, and in the end, she looked horrible. She looked like a monster. And she had been an absolutely beautiful woman. She was Italian. She was beautiful. And she just could not give up the belief that one more thing to fix her face would fix her depression or, you know, whatever it was, you know, that something external to her emotional life would fix her, and it doesn't. The Porsche won't do it. Well, it might help a little, But, you know, those things in the end really don't make you feel any better. You're still
yourself.
Well,
Adrian, as an expert then, how does a woman, you know, avoid this kind of nightmare? I mean, what are the things she can do at any age to be able to prevent a lot of this, self-body shaming and problems with body image and all the rest of it? What do you think?
I'm glad you asked me that question, Pam, because I have some ideas. One is really cut down on your social media and leafing through the magazines and comparing yourself. Look for the style of clothes maybe or something like that. Don't bash your friends. Don't let your friends bash you. But for the most part, stop calling yourself negative names. That negative name calling is one of the most maintaining factors in a poor body image. It is deadly to you. Be kind to yourself. Have compassion for yourself. That makes a huge difference. Give your energy and your attention to things that are meaningful in life, no matter what you weigh. Don't let that hold you back at all. Think of yourself, I guess, as your own best friend, that you want to treat yourself as well as you treat other people in your life, and that goes back to the name-calling. And really, really don't buy into the advertising. Those images are unrealistic. The models are not even The gorgeous models are not even good enough for a lot of advertisers. Ralph Lauren, I think, got involved in a lawsuit. He had a model who was 5'10 and weighed, I think it was 98 or 95 pounds, and he fired her, and then they photoshopped her image because they wanted her to look thinner, and it wound up that her head was actually larger than her pelvic area. It was bigger than her pelvic area. So remember, advertising is designed to make you buy a product, and you buy a product because they make you think you need it and you feel shame or that you're not good enough. It's really bad. I came across this quote years ago that I love. There was a news journalist named Eric Severide, and I want you all out there to think about this. The biggest big business in America, and now apparently all over the world, is not steel, automobiles, or television. It is the manufacture, refinement, and distribution of anxiety. And everybody, every advertiser is trying to make you feel anxious and buy something that's going to transform you. And first of all, you probably don't need transforming. And second of all, transform yourself into being a beautiful person. And it shows when you like yourself. You glow. You know, you glow with self-kindness or whatever it is that gives you that kind of a glow. It works. You've seen people who are confident, your eye goes right to them. And it's not because they're thin or they look like a model. There are people who are, you know, women who are 5'2", who carry a charisma and a charm that makes you want to go over to them and start talking, or you want to be like them. That, I think, that making yourself into the person you want to be is not really through fashion or the scale.
I love it. I love it. You know, something else, I mean, I love these tools and these recommendations because it makes so much sense, needless to say. I also have always been a believer, and I've lived my life this way, and that is to find every single kind of achievement in your life. And to just live those dreams. So whether you want to play the cello or whether or not you're a fabulous tennis player or whatever the issue is, achievement doesn't come from staring at the mirror for 20 hours. Achievement comes from, you know, getting on out there and kicking butt in your own little domain. Whatever it is that you love to do, write and paint and, you know, sing and, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. You just to go out there and to feel that sense of achievement. Because, Adrian, I think that when women feel that, and girls and whomever, that tends to override a lot of the silliness and pettiness about attaching 100% of our confidence to appearance. That say that I'm a great whatever I am. You know what I mean? I'm a great author. I'm a great whatever it may be. It's all good.
Just say something real quick, Pam? When you said you don't have to be a world-famous tennis player, I think that's really important for your listeners. You may not be the greatest tennis player, or people run when you play your cello or something like that, but if you enjoy it and you get self-satisfaction, that is wonderful, because you're filling yourself up with wonderful things. You're not filling yourself with empty promises.
I love it. This is fantastic. Adrian, once again, nothing but a fount of knowledge, wit, and wisdom. And in this case, all about body image and women at any age. So we've been talking to Adrian Ressler, and she's the Vice President of Professional Development for the Renfrew Center Foundation. And as you all know, Renfrew Center is one of the nation's leading institutions providing treatment for eating disorders. And Adrian, it's so wonderful to have you back on her radio once again. We absolutely love it. Thank you. Remember
to
catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Because we want to attract many more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, can you leave a review as well? Hey, remember, my mother reads these things. I take it sensitively. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Means a lot. And whatever you do, stay well.